of absolutely nothing at all. I just wanted to talk about something because it was something I was involved in a little bit. That is now that one of the Rambam's klalim is that the Torah is eternal, the Torah will never be changed. And one of the kashas they ask on the Rambam, the Rashba asks the kasha, is the din of Ben Zoma, where Ben Zoma says that there's a mitzvah to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim in day and night, but we're not going to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim Limosa Moshiach, because that is going to be, according to Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, that says, days will come where people will no longer say, thank you Hashem, who took you out of Mitzrayim, but they will say, thank you Hashem, who was Makabetz the Golos Moldova. Now, the Chachamim learn, we are going to be Maskir Limosa Moshiach, and that just means Yetzias Mitzrayim will be a Tafel, we're going to still mention it, but the Nisim of Moshiach will be greater. That's the Chachamim. But Ben Zoma actually says, you're not Maskir. And we paskin like Ben Zoma, the proof is, because we mentioned the Exodus at night. In other words, you understand it's connected, because if you darshan, you mention the Exodus at night, that means you don't mention it in Limosa Moshiach. And we paskin, we mention the Exodus at night. We're not going to mention it in Limosa Moshiach. So this was a very big kasha. So the emes is, we have a very famous sefer of Jewish philosophy, Rav Yosef Alba. This was written in the 1400s, the 15th century. And Rav Yosef Albo's sefer is called Sefer Ha'Ikarim. And the Sefer Ha'Ikarim is the whole book. It's a very popular book, meaning it's a much easier book to read than the Mor Nebuchim and the like. Rav Albo's argument is that he doesn't agree with the Rambam. The Rambam says there are 13 fundamental principles of faith that a Jew must believe in. And if you don't believe in these fundamental principles of faith, you are a heretic, you are an epicurus, you are a kofar. If the Rambam's lashon even is you're not a Jew, but he doesn't mean you're not a Jew in a total sense, but he means that you are not a person who has the belief of a Jew. Religiously, you're not a Jew. As opposed to Mechalel Shabbos, a person does very serious averus, but he has the beliefs of a Jew. Rav Albo disagrees with the Rambam. Rav Albo says, there are not 13 fundamental principles. Rav Albo said, some of what the Rambam says should be called an ikar. An ikar means a root. And some of what the Rambam said should be called an anaf, a branch. And the Rambam is combining branches and roots by making all 13 fundamental. Rav Albo's argument is, there are only three fundamental principles that a Jew must believe in. A Jew must believe in Metzias Hashem, that there is a God who created heaven and earth. A Jew must believe in reward and punishment, meaning God will reward virtue and God will punish evil. And you must believe there is a Torah min Hashamayim, that God gave a Torah to tell us what is good and evil. Now, what does Rav Albo say? Let's take like this. Let's say, I believe that there's Olam Haba. I believe that after a person dies, there's Olam Haba. But I don't believe in Mashiach, or I don't believe in resurrection of the dead. According to the Rambam, if I don't believe in Mashiach, I don't believe in resurrection of the dead, I am a heretic, and I'm an apikoros, I'm a kofar, because one of the fundamental principles is Mashiach and Tchias HaMesa. Those are two principles.
What's it mean if someone's a heretic?
Someone's a heretic, so there's no, there would be no mitzvah to, if they're starving, there'd be no mitzvah to feed them, etc. You would not give them any tzedakah. There's no mitzvah to love them and care about them. In fact, it's mashma from the Rambam that if someone is an intentional heretic, there's not even a mitzvah to be makarev him, meaning to say you have no achrayas to even try to bring him back to God. He's on his own. So some people differ with the Rambam on that, but that's what the Rambam seems to say. There's no inyan of kirev to apikorsim. Now, according to Rav Albo, just to show you the difference here, according to Rav Albo, as long as I believe that God has some system of reward and punishment. As long as I believe in reward and punishment, the fact that I don't believe in resurrection of the dead or Mashiach does not make me a heretic, because I do believe in some system of reward and punishment. It may make me mistaken. See, this is where people often misunderstand what Rav Albo was doing. They say, oh, Rav Albo said you don't have to believe in Mashiach. That's not the case at all. He certainly says that Judaism believes in the Mashiach. He certainly says Judaism believes in Tchiyas HaMesim. But he's making a point that if you have an erroneous belief, that is not the same as a heretical belief. He says, Mashiach is an anaf, it is a branch of the root of Schar V'Onesh. So even if you're missing a branch, you still have the root. This is where he would differ with the Rambam. Even things like, quite amazingly enough, if you believe God has a body, and you believe God is the man with a long white beard sitting on a throne, according to the Rambam, that is a heretical belief. That is an apikoros belief. Because one of the Rambam's principles is God has no body or physical form. And even on that Rambam, the Ravid himself says, when the Rambam says, anyone who believes that God has a physical body is an apikoros, is a kofer, is a heretic, that's what the Rambam says. The Ravid says, how can you say that? Kama gedolim v'tovim mimenu. Now, the word mimenu is an interesting word here. Kama gedolim v'tovim. So many great people and good people. Now, mimenu, this is fascinating. The word mimenu in Hebrew is an ambiguous word. Mimenu can mean from amongst us, meaning he's just saying, good Jews have this belief. Or it might be a shtach. Mimenu means from him, meaning people better than you. Mimenu means better than you. People better than you believe that God had a body. So all the Mefarshim explain that the Ravid is not saying that God has a body. The Ravid is rather making the same point as Rav Yosef Albo. Yeah, people have mistaken beliefs. People believe things that are not true. But not every mistake in your belief means you're an apikoros. This is very important, because people will constantly, from outside the yeshiva world, they will constantly bring up Rav Yosef Albo to say you don't have to believe in a lot of things. The emes is, fundamentally, there is no machlokas at all between Rav Albo and the Rambam as to what are the teachings of Judaism. They're exactly the same. They are simply arguing, if through ignorance I don't believe some of those teachings, so I'm mistaken, I'm wrong, I'm erroneous, but that doesn't move me into the category of apikoros and kofar. The Rambam would have such a definition. Rav Yosef Albo says not. If, on the other hand, you believe that there is no reward and punishment at all, that God essentially doesn't care if you do good or do bad, that is a heretical belief, because you're denying the whole concept that God expects us to behave a certain way, right? So Rav Yosef Albo's book goes through a lot of different rayos that what the Rambam calls fundamental cannot by definition be fundamental. So in fact, when the Rambam says that one of the principles is the Torah will never change, so Rav Albo has a discussion of two areas where the Torah apparently does change. One is the question I started off with, that according to Ben Zoma, the mitzvah of recounting the Exodus every day, not Leil Pesach, but every day, is going to be abrogated, it's going to be terminated when the Mashiach comes. So we see, in other words, that the mitzvos of God are not enduring forever. This is his kasha. This was the Rashba's kasha as well. And by the way, the reason why this ikar is so important, there's really a reason why the Rambam emphasized certain ikarim, because this is the primary argument against Christianity. Christianity taught, whatever version, Catholicism, whatever version you want to talk about, See, Christianity is different than Islam. Islam rewrites the past. Islam rewrites the story. Islam claims, although Islam has a strength religiously because it's monotheistic. That's the strength of Islam spiritually. But Islam has a certain falsification that Islam rewrites things. Islam says the Akedah, you know, was with Yishmael, etc. Christianity accepts everything that's recorded in the Torah as true and divine. God gave the Ten Commandments. God gave the Torah to the Jewish people. They believe in every word of that Bible. But what is their claim? Yeah, God did it, but God changed his mind. Not arbitrarily, changed his mind because, you know, you became not worthy. So the whole foundation of Christianity rises or falls on this idea that the Torah is not necessarily eternal. The Torah can be changed by later prophecies. And therefore the Rambam says, no, no, no. It is the fundamental Jewish belief that the Torah is eternal. And yet, Rav Yosef Albo says, wait a second, but we got this problem. There's a mitzvah that's going to be abrogated when Mashiach comes.
Why is that against the Torah being eternal? Just the Torah also says that mitzvah is going to change.
Yeah, the problem is the Torah doesn't say it, though. See, that's the problem. The problem is that the source that Yetzias Mitzrayim is going to be abrogated is not a verse in the Torah. It's a verse of the prophet Yirmiyahu that says, Hine Yamin Bayim. So in other words, a later prophet can give us a message from Hashem that certain mitzvos aren't going to apply anymore. That sounds like somebody else talking, in which a certain prophet comes and says, I have a message from God. If the Torah would have said, if the Torah itself says, this mitzvah only applies for a certain time, that's what the Torah says. But the Torah doesn't say that. It's a prophetic revelation that says that. How could that be?
So under rules of holiness into the Nevi'im?
Well, it is a problem. Generally speaking, we don't listen to Nevi'im.
And also, who's counted as a Nevi'im to listen to?
Well, yeah, there are rules like that. So certainly, and you could analyze it that way as well. But on the other hand, but in a way, it goes a little circular because the rule is you don't listen to a Navi who says a certain mitzvah doesn't apply. But that's only because we have a fundamental principle: the Torah is eternal. Until you have that principle, the Navi theoretically would be able to do that, you see? So it's Ha Bo HaTalia. I mean, the Rambam develops this in the context of saying that's why we don't listen to a Navi. See, the Rambam makes it very, very clear that even false prophets could be totally capable of doing miracles. He says, we do not even have to deny that someone like Yashka may have done miracles. There are either powers of Tuma that a person can use, there's magic, or sometimes Hashem might even give the Navi Sheker a power as a way of testing our faith. So the Rambam says, he's not saying anything is true, but the Rambam is saying, we don't have to deny any of those miraculous events. But that doesn't change the fundamental principle of Maimed Har Sinai, that the Torah is eternal.
How do you know the Navi didn't have some kind of sword that this one last?
Well, how do we know? Well, you know, I mean, I don't know how we know, but I mean, the Gemara doesn't say that he did. And once again, what would stop Yashka from, you know, saying, I have a Messiah, you know, unless you had some proof of it. So, the embassy says, I'll give you two terutzim for this particular kasha. Because again, the Rashba himself asked the kasha much earlier than Rav Yosef Albo.
There are ways of seeing if somebody's real Navi or not. You're making it sound like we don't really know who's Navi.
Well,
because anybody can take it, but there's...
I understand, but the truth of the matter is, this is not as easy as you would say. For example, you're going to go in circles unless you accept the principle, meaning like this. Except for this principle, a fake Navi will be able to pass every other test. In other words, what would the normal test be? The normal test would be, a Navi might be asked... Sanhedrin has different ways of testing a Navi. A Navi might be asked to do a miracle. If he can't do a miracle, Hashem didn't choose him. Okay? So we eliminate those guys. A second thing the Rambam says is a Navi will be asked to predict short-term future predictions. Now, this could be anything. The stock market tomorrow, who's going to win the World Series? But he has to have 100% accuracy. If he's not 100% accurate, he's not a Navi. The Rambam lays down another rule, very important subcategory rule, that this is only true if his Navua is for a good thing or his Navua is for a neutral thing. So if it doesn't happen, 100%, he's false. But if he gives you a Navua for a negative thing, he says that somebody's going to die, you know, a Jew's going to die tomorrow, then even if the Jew doesn't die, that doesn't prove he's a false Navi, because maybe Hashem had rachamim. So, one way of testing a Navi is through miracle. A second way of testing a Navi is through prediction. So you are correct. A lot of guys are going to be eliminated that way. But the third way of testing the Navi is that he can't be taking away a mitzvah of the Torah. Now, if you didn't have that rule, then you'd only have the first two ways, right? But the problem is, the first two ways, the Rambam says, even a false Navi, in other words, it wouldn't be, in other words, without the third principle, you don't have a valid test. Because a false Navi will have the koach to do these things sometimes. So you're right. I wouldn't say that without this third Yesite, anybody could claim the Torah is being changed. But some people would be able to get away with it. And therefore, that third principle is very, very important. So the Rashba says the following. The Rashba gives a teretz, which it's a shvera teretz, actually, but I'll tell you what the Rashba says. The Rashba says that this is not called the nullification of a mitzvah. Why is it not called the nullification of a mitzvah? It's not called the nullification of a mitzvah because the whole yisayit of zecha, remembering the Exodus, is hakara satov that Hashem redeemed us. And that hakara satov will be replaced by talking about the geula of Mashiach. But when we praise Hashem for the geula of Mashiach, we are also praising Hashem for Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why? Because had we not been taken out of Mitzrayim that very moment, we would have hit the 50th level of Tumah, and there wouldn't have been a Jewish people to experience Mashiach. So every time we praise Hashem, for what? For the Geula of Mashiach, we are automatically praising Hashem. See the Rashba's teretz. So I don't have to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim because the simcha of the redemption of Mashiach is possible only because of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because remember, had there not been a Yetzias Mitzrayim at that point, we would have been gone as a people. So the Rashba therefore says that this prophetic commandment that we're no longer going to mention the Exodus is not really being mevatel a mitzvah. It is simply the mitzvah assuming a new form in which Yetzias Mitzrayim will become subsumed. It'll become included in praising Hashem for the geula of Mashiach. And the Rashba points out, and you do see Yetzias Mitzrayim is not going to be forgotten because even Ben Zoma just takes away the daily mitzvah. Korban Pesach and the Haggadah once a year, that we're still going to do. So on the anniversary, we're still going to do it. Now, of course, that's a separate mitzvah. But he says that we're still going to be connected to that Exodus, but the daily remembrance will be subsumed in the larger idea of the Geula. This is the Rashba's. This is the Rashba's teretz. Maharal gives a different teretz, which overlaps a little bit, but it's a little bit of a teretz. The Maharal says there are two inyanim, there are two ideas. When you mention the Exodus, Yetzias Mitzrayim, there are two ideas that you're emphasizing. One is Hakaras Hatov. I am grateful to Hashem. He gave us freedom. And that includes, he gave us man. He did miracles for us. There is gratitude. That's one idea in mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim. The other is Yetzias Mitzrayim made us a nation. So he says like this. When Ben Zoma says we're not going to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim, he doesn't actually mean you're not going to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim. He just means you're not going to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim as a way of being thankful to Hashem for the man, for the clouds of glory, because what Hashem is going to do for you in the days of Mashiach is going to be so much greater that you're not going to thank Hashem for the small favors when you're thanking Hashem for the huge favors, comparatively small. But you still will mention Yetzias Mitzrayim as a foundation. Again, this part is like the Rashba for the Geula Hasida, but you're not going to say, thank you Hashem for the man, thank you for the Exodus, but you will think about it as the creation of Am Yisrael. But be it as it may, the common denominator of these two answers is that even Ben Zoma is not annulling the mitzvah. It's just going to take a different form. Now, Rav Albo then brings a second kasha on the Rambam, which has really nothing to do with the Seder, or totally is out of a totally different area, and that is the change of the writing of the Torah. This is actually a very fascinating sugya. The ksav in a Sefer Torah, which is really the regular Hebrew alphabet with certain embellishments, is called ksav Ashuris. Now there is an older Hebrew writing that we have, you know, some dictionaries have it, and we have many inscriptions in this writing that is called Kesav Ivri. Somewhat of a little bit of, I mean, you know, you can actually see a connection. Kesav Ashuris is a much nicer, in fact, Kesav Ashuris, although it seems to be translated as Syrian writing, according to one interpretation in the Gemara, Ashuris does not mean Assyrian, but it means Me'usheres, that means beautiful writing. Because you can see the difference. The Kesav Ivri is a more primitive scrawl, and Kesav Ashuris is a beautiful script. So the Gemara Sanhedrin says the following. Originally, the Torah was given in Kesav Ivri. And only in the days of Ezra, this is after the Babylonian exile, Ezra introduced Kesav Ashuris. And the Gemara says this was a special zechus for Ezra, because Ezra was as great as Moshe Rabbeinu, and had the Torah not been given to Moshe, it would have been given to Ezra. But we already got the Torah, so Ezra couldn't do that. So Hashem enabled Ezra to kind of be a giver of the Torah by changing the ksav of the Torah. Now the Gemara asks right away on that, how could Ezra change the ksav of the Torah, even if we say he did it b'nevuah? But a Navi cannot change the Torah, right? That's our principle. So it says, well, a Navi cannot change the Torah, but here the Torah itself authorizes a change, because the Torah is referred to as Mishneh HaTorah. Now some say it's only Sefer Devarim, but the Pashas of the Pasuk is Mishneh HaTorah. And Mishneh Torah, on one hand, we translate as a repetition of the Torah because the book of Devarim repeats. But the Gemara's drasha is that Mishneh comes from the word shinui. And it's a ksav. The Torah is telling you this is a ksav that at some future date is going to be changed. Now, the emphasis is, this itself answers Rav Albo's kasha. So Rav Albo says, oh, you see things change. Now, here, your point is exactly right. And the Mefarshim say that this is not an example of a mitzvah changing, because here the authorization for the change is built into the Torah itself. The first kasha of the Exodus, that is a kasha, because there you're talking about a prophet changing the Torah. Here, the Torah builds into its own system ksav sheyachol lishtana. So your time is 100% correct with respect to ksav ashuris. So now I want to explain that a little bit. So what the Torah is telling you is, what the Gemara is telling you is, that from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Pashas of the Gemara, until the time of Ezra, that means the whole Hemshech of the Bayis Rishon, and the 70 years of the Gullus, until the beginning of the Bayis Sheni, Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzas, that seem to have been written in Ksav Ivri, and Ezra was literally Mechadesh, a new alphabet. Now, you'll hear from college professors that will tell you, oh, you know, you guys, you're so religious, you think nothing could ever change. Well, your great Hebrew alphabet is just an Assyrian alphabet or a Babylonian alphabet that Ezra introduced because he thought it was pretty. So first of all, I want to explain one thing, that this is a great, great misunderstanding of the Pashut Pshat of the Gemara. Here, you have to understand something. It is true that one interpretation of Ashuris in the Gemara is Assyrian, besides Mu'usharis, but it's beautiful. And Assyrian, for some reason, is being used as a synonym for Babylonia, although they were not the same country, but that's another question. Why Ashuris? Call it Bablis. But the Gemara is not suggesting, this is very important, the Gemara is never suggesting we took this as a Babylonian alphabet. In point of fact, Arkasav Ashuris does not correspond to an Assyrian or Babylonian writing. Rather, it was revealed to us in Bavel in the handwriting on the wall. So when it says Ashuris, it just means Hashem revealed it, not that we took it over from another nation. And if you remember the story, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylonia, destroyed the Mikdash. Eventually he died. He reigned for a long time. He reigned for 45 years. He was succeeded by his son, Evil Merudach, who reigned for 23 years. But towards the end of the 70 years, his grandson, Belshazzar, became king. Belshazzar, you might remember, happens to be the father of Vashti. That's from the Persian Achashverosh. Okay. Belshazzar miscalculated the 70 years. He counted it to an earlier point. He figured the Jews weren't redeemed yet. They're not going to be redeemed. He made a massive celebration, as Achashverosh did later. He took all the utensils of the Beis Hamikdash, celebrating that God has been vanquished and God's home is not going to be rebuilt. And in the middle of his merrymaking and partying, there's a huge hand. Imagine the scary scene. And that's how we get the English expression, the handwriting on the wall. See, it comes from that story. And the hand inscribed on the wall of Belshazzar's palace, Menei, Menei, Tekalu Parsin. That's Aramaic, which was the spoken language of Babylon. But the problem was, it was in an alphabet that nobody could decipher, including the Jews. Ksav Ashuris. But the Jews didn't have that. The Jews didn't know what it was. But Daniel, with Ruach HaKodesh, was able to decipher that ksav. And the four words were, Menei, Menei, Tekal, Uparsin, which basically means, your deeds have been counted. Menei, Menei, counted and recounted. Takal, they have been weighed. Shekel, Lishko. Uparsin means Persia. Your empire shall be given to the Persians. And that very night, Belshazzar went to sleep, and in a bloodless coup, except for him, he got killed, but essentially he was killed by his servants, and Madai, then Paras, just took over the Babylonian Empire peacefully. And then you have Koresh, of course, and then Achashverosh, right? Then we get into the rest of the story and the like. So it turns out, when the Gemara says Ksav Ashuris, it means it was revealed to Daniel. Now, Daniel did not make it the writing of the Sifrei Torah. Ezra's later. But at the time of the beginning of the Bayis Sheni, Ezra saw the Gilui to Daniel as Hashem giving Rishos to use the Ksav Ashuris.
That's a good question.
So the question becomes, even if Daniel could decipher those particular letters, Yeah, so the Gemara is not clear here, but apparently what happened was that as a result of the Gilui to Daniel, the prophets or the Nevi'im were able to visualize the entire alphabet, and that was the Yesod of Ksav HaShiris. Okay. But the question becomes like this. Tosfos asks a Gevaldig Kasha. The Man D'Amar that says the Torah was given in Ksav HaShiris, Ksav Ivri, and then it became Ksav HaShiris, that is Rav Chisda. That's so Rav Chisda in Sanhedrin says the Torah was given initially in Ivri, and it was Nishtana to Ashuris. But there's another statement of Rav Chisda in Maseches Megillah. Mem v'samach shebeluchais v'neis hayu emdim. What does that mean? When Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu the luchais, so the letters went through the entire stone. And not only that, but even though it went through the entire stone, you could read them from both sides, which is a miracle, because the letters would be backwards from the back. But Rav Chisda, so one miracle is that even though it went through the entire stone, you could read it. And there's another miracle about the final mem and the final samach. Think about this. The final mem and the final samach, you're going to have a middle piece. If you go all the way through the stone, what is connecting the middle piece? It's surrounded by air. Every other letter, every part of the letter is connected to something. The mem and the samach is vacant air. What is holding that middle piece in? Answer, it's a miracle. Another miracle. So frektais is akasha, but that's only true in Ksav HaShiris. In Ksav Ivri, there is a final mem and a final samach, but it's connected. So there's a stira in Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda says in Sanhedrin that until Ezra, the Torah was given in Ksav Ivri, but Rav Chisda says, Mem v'samach shebeluchais, b'neis, hayu omdos. That's a good kasha, Taisus asks. So there's a tshuva from the Radvaz. The Radvaz, Rav David ben Zimra, don't confuse the Radvaz with the Ridvaz. The Ridvaz is early 20th century. That was the Rav of Slutsk, who spent a little bit of time in Chicago. Then he went back to Europe, and then eventually came to Eretz Israel. He was Rav in Tzfat, one of the Gedolei HaPaiskim. But the Radvaz is also a bigger Gedolei HaPaiskim, the time of the Beis Yosef. The Radvaz is one of the Iker Achreinim. And the Radvaz gives a Gevaldige Teretz. The Radvaz is Mechalek. First of all, he says, it's a Madnazach. How is it Shaykh? The Yidden didn't have Ksav HaShiris. Ksav HaShiris is the holy Ksav from which Hashem created Shemayim Va'aretz. The Radvaz says the following. When Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai with the Luchos Rishonos, the first Luchos were 100% in Ksav HaShiris, because that is the holy language. And on that, Rav Chisda said, Mem v'samach shebeluchais, b'nei sayu omdim. But the Jewish people never saw that. The Jewish people never learned Ksav HaShiris. Their language, their writing, was Ksav Ivri. Ksav HaShiris was Niskala et Matan Torah. But they didn't see it. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, and the ego, so remember the Medrash even says, the letters flew off the Luchos. And anyway, Moshe smashed the Luchos. So, the Luchos Shniyas, the Radvaz says, we were no longer worthy of Ksav HaShiris. So we got Ksav Ivri. That's the only Ksav we ever knew we had. We didn't even know what we didn't have. But we were not roy for Ksav HaShiris. And that's what the Gemara is. So now it's not a stira. When Rav Chisda says, Mem v'samach shebeluchais b'nei sayu emdeis, that's the Luchos Rishonos. The Luchos Shniyos, the Sifrei Torah, the Tefillin, the Mezuzos, was all Ksav Ivri. And when Ezra saw through the handwriting on the wall and the Pasuk Mishnah HaTorah that there's Rishus to be Mishana, his Shinoi was to bring back the Torah in the original form that the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted.
What did Adam have?
I don't know. I don't know. Did Adam have a ksav? It's not so borrowed that Adam. I can say that the ksav in the days of the Avos was ksav ivri. The Avos Gufa didn't have ksav ashuris. Adam, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if Adam had ksav. But now the only question that remains is, why would Ezra be zeicha to this? If we were not zeicha, if we lost ksav ashuris because we were not zeicha, what happened in Ezra's time that we get zeicha to it? So the Meshech Chachma is my. No, because like this, our ksav was ksav ivri. Matan Torah, we so came back to Adam Rishon kind of Machet. Matan Torah was gonna give us ksav ashuris, and we lost it. So we never had ksav ashuris. So the Meshech Chachma says, Gevaldik, we lost ksav ashuris because of the Chet HaEgel, which is the Chet of Avodah Zorah. Ezra and the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, they were Mevatel, the Yetzirah of Avodah Zorah. Remember, they fasted 3 days, so Hashem would take away the Yetzirah for idolatry. So now it fits very beautifully. We lose the Yetzirah, the Avodah Zorah, we're Zoicha to Ksav Ashuris, because we no longer have the Pagam of the Chet HaEgel. Again, a fascinating cheshbon in how you understand the Shinoi HaKsav.
Tosfos doesn't answer his own question?
I have to remember what Tosfos says. Tosfos does answer, but Tosfos basically just says that it's like a machlekes what Rav Chista's Shita was. That's all. In other words, this Gemara learns Rav Chista this way, that Gemara learns Rav Chista this way. Now, I just want to say one final thing, and that is, philosophically, we look at losing the Yetzirah of Avodah Zarah as a good thing. That Baruch Hashem, I don't have a Yetzirah for idolatry. But in truth, it was a very big loss for us. I like to use the Lashon. It was like a spiritual lobotomy. You know, in the 50s, they used to, person had seizures or whatever. Sometimes a person just misbehaved in class. They were very, they would cut away part of the brain to get rid of the bad part. But unfortunately, you cut away, the bad part, you also cut away some of the good part as well. The Gemara in Yuma says, when the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah fasted for 3 days, so we would lose the Yetzirah for idolatry, it was a fiery lion that emerged from the Kodesh HaKadoshim into the desert. So it's a mutton to think, strange. Why would the Yetzirah of idolatry resemble... Well, a lion, that's not so difficult. That's a strong Yetzirah. But why would it be from the Kodesh HaKadoshim? The answer is, the Rambam says in Hilchos Avodah Zarah that the origin of idolatry came because people had such Yiras Hashem that they were overwhelmed. They felt they're not worthy to approach Hashem. We will give honor to Hashem by worshiping the subordinate forces. It later degenerated to paganism, but initially it was worshiping God by worshiping the sun and the moon. So it turned out that the awesome Yiras Hashem that people had by feeling the presence of God was in itself that which was machshil them in the sin of idolatry. That's why it comes from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So it's like a lobotomy. Hashem had to take away that feeling from us, because it pushed us into a bad thing. But what happened was, we lost the feeling. Right? Do I feel, I can't die when I'm so overwhelmed with the pachad of Hashem? We don't have that feeling. Sure, God listens to my prayer, sure. And that is why, the same time we lost the Yetzirah of Avodah Zarah, we lost prophecy. Because when we no longer had that awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we lost the Kayach and the Vua as well, right? So everything does have a cost. Okay, maybe we'll stop it for a little while.
The Shiva, you know.